You are Locked On Jets, your daily New York Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Jets podcast. It's Wednesday, January 9th, 2019. I'm your host, John B. from GangreneNation.com. Listening to the show is easy. All you have to do is ask Alexa, Google, or Siri to play Locked On Jets, and you can start playing this podcast. It's Wednesday, but we're going to do a mailbag today. Usually we do our mailbags on Thursday, but because of scheduling this week, we're going to move things up a day. So we'll jump right in. These are questions both emailed to me and submitted through the comment section of gangrenenation.com. First question is from a listener named Luke. I feel like this year's coaching search offers more attractive candidates compared to last time around. How do you feel about this crop of candidates compared to how you felt back then about the 2015 candidates? Were you happy about the Bulls hiring when it happened? Well, I'll answer the last question. I'll answer that one first. Was I happy about the Bulls hiring? I thought of the candidates. So this shows you should probably take what I have to say about this coaching search with a grain of salt. Bulls was probably my favorite of the candidates the Jets interviewed at the time. Now you go through the list. You had Anthony Lynn, you had Dan Quinn, you had Tom Cable, Doug Marrone, Frank Reich, Todd Bowles, Sean McDermott, and Gary Kubiak turned down the interview request. And Kubiak, what was interesting about Kubiak was that he announced early in the coaching process that he was not going to interview for any head coaching jobs. Then Denver had a late coaching change, and Kubiak ended up going there. Now, Kubiak did not know what was happening. He just had a very strong relationship with John Elway, who back from Elway's playing days. So, you know, you look at that list, and I got to be honest with you, I did not think it was that great of a list at the time, but you look at this list, and you have Anthony Lynn, who's coaching a team this weekend, and, you know, a lot of people kind of laughed at the idea that the Jets were interviewing Lynn. You have Frank Reich, who's going to be coaching this weekend. I mean, that's... Two guys who were pretty strong candidates. So that was not a terrible crop of coaching candidates. You know, you look at guys who were coaching in this the final eight last year. You had Dan Quinn and Doug Marrone. You had Sean McDermott, who was in the playoffs last year. Now I think of these guys right now, Lynn and Reich look like the two best. I think, you know, Quinn and Marrone especially have shown that they're not necessarily all that great, but you look at this list, and one thing that's striking is that outside of Tom Cable, who I was very upset the Jets were interviewing that guy at the time, but outside of Tom Cable, every single one of these candidates, aside from Todd Bowles, got a head coaching job and made the playoffs with his team. So, you know, that shows you what the Jets have done, shows you the quality of what the Jets did 4 years ago. This year's crop, you know, I think the candidate quality varies. I think there are some candidates who intrigue me a lot. I think there are some who don't really intrigue me at all, and I guess that's pretty common. I think it's tough to say. I think it's tough to say when you don't have the guy who's the slam dunk hire. You know, you think back to 97, the Parcells hire, guy you're going to go out and get. And I think that's what disappointed me. What disappointed me about this search was right at the top of it, the owner said, we're not going to even consider somebody who wants control of personnel. And those tend to be the most accomplished guys. You know, the guys who want the final say over player personnel, those tend to be the guys who are the most credible. They have the best resumes. And that's the reason they're in a position to ask for it. So the fact that they ruled those guys out from the outset makes me a little down on this whole process. I'm not saying you necessarily hired one of those guys. To be honest with you, there are not many guys I would consider giving control of player personnel to, but to just rule it out from the outset, you know, if some guy who's a really big fish was interested in the Jets, and the Jets pretty much just said, we're not going to give anybody control of player personnel, I don't care how good your resume is, that kind of soured me on the whole process. I'm not saying you necessarily would have hired that guy to begin with. I'm not saying you may end up going with a guy like Matt Rhule, who's in college, who, you know, probably would not be in a position to demand that type of control right off the bat. He may end up being the best guy. You know, sometimes the best hire is not is not the best coach in the past. It's the guy who's going to be the best coach in the future. So, you know, these are things to keep in mind. But that whole thing is just, I'm not saying it's going to be impossible for the Jets to hire a quality coach. I think there are some candidates out there who could potentially make good coaches, but I don't like how they limited themselves right from the outset. I think there are some quality candidates of guys who conceivably could be pretty good, but I think that they artificially limited their search from the outset, and that's one of my frustrations. And it's just one of those things that is, I think part of my issue is just, and this is me speaking, maybe I'm wrong, any one of these candidates is going to require kind of a leap of faith. You're going to have to trust that the Jets know how to find the next big guy, because most of these guys are not proven. Outside of really Mike McCarthy and maybe Jim Caldwell, there isn't much of a track record of success as on the NFL level as a head coach for any of these candidates. And even then, Caldwell, I think the record of success is kind of limited. So essentially what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to make a leap of faith that the Jets know what they're doing. The Jets know how to develop a coach. You know, you talk about developing players. Well, sometimes the organization has to put the infrastructure in place to incubate a coaching career. They have to help a young coach learn how to do his job for the first time. And I just don't, and this is just me, I kind of lack faith in the Jets and their ability to do that right now. And I've been pretty open that I'm kind of down on the people running this organization. I did not love the way that they've run this team for years. I did not love the way they handled, you know, it goes all the way to the top. I was not in love with the fact that Mike Maccagnan was brought back. I was not in love with what I heard at their season-ending press conference. There's just lots of issues I have with this franchise right now. So I don't think it's impossible for them to make a quality hire, but I don't love some of the things I've seen in this process. Yeah. Now, there are some good candidates. The Jets still can hire a good coach. It's NFL playoff season, and it really is the most wonderful time of the year. You can make sure you're ready for the daily action by signing up at MyBookie. They pay fast when you win, ownership really cares about good customer service, and they offer the craziest props. Where you bet is just as important as who you're betting on, and if you want to make money, you can go to MyBookie. Join now, MyBookie will offer you a 50% deposit bonus to make sure that you have a nice bankroll for the postseason. Use promo code LOCKEDON25, that's LOCKEDON, number 2, number 5, when you deposit to activate the offer. That's promo code LOCKEDON25. At MyBookie, you play, you win, you get paid. Moving on, our next question. As coaching staff start filling, is Rhule the best candidate left if McCarthy seems out? I think you could make a case. What's tough about this is that there's not much of a track record with Rhule, and there's definitely not an NFL track record. So what you're kind of depending on people to tell you how Rhule would be in the NFL. It seems like there's a lot of buzz around him, though. It seems like a lot of people believe he would be a good NFL coach. Now, again, he's only got one year of experience in the NFL, and that's as an assistant position coach. So you're kind of making a projection here, but you look at the job he's done. And he does not have a ton of head coaching experience, but you know he went to Temple and was very successful. And Temple is not an easy place to win. When you look at the job performance, you can't always go based purely on record. You kind of have to compare. You have to compare his performance with his predecessors. You have to compare how the team did under a coach's watch versus that team's historic performance. Temple usually does not win. You know, Temple historically is not a good program. So the fact that he could go there, win 10 games back-to-back, very impressive. And then he goes to Baylor, which is just, if you follow college football, you know what a mess that program was when he took it over. I mean, there were issues all over the place. And, you know, the first year was a struggle, but year two, they improved the record by 6 games. So you have a clear upward trajectory. And Baylor, again, is not necessarily – Baylor struggled other than the Art – now, he took over for Art Briles, but Baylor has been a horrible program in the Big 12. It was a horrible program in the Big 12 before Art Briles took over. So the fact that he, within 2 years, was kind of able – and Briles did not – and, again, Briles left that program in disgrace. So the fact that within 2 years that they're back on the upswing, I think that's promising. you know, you can make a case. There are lots of guys you can make a case for. You can make a case for Mike McCarthy. I think McCarthy's resume is very good. The question with McCarthy is not so much what he's done in the past. The question is, will he be able to sustain that success in the future? And I think some people have some questions about that, but McCarthy has a very good resume. I think, you know, Monken is an intriguing candidate, a guy with a lot of experience, done a lot of different things, worked in NFL, worked in college, exposed to some good offensive minds, had coaching experience on the college level where he helped execute a rebuilding job. So, you know, lots of candidates who I find pretty intriguing. A number of candidates I think you could argue are near the top of the list. You could argue a lot of guys should be considered the best candidate. I think Rhule would be a guy who would be in that mix for me. Next question. If you were head coach and Rex Ryan called you wanting to be the defensive coordinator, what would you say to him? Well, if I was the head coach of 31 of the 32 teams in the NFL, I'd say, Rex, I'll strongly consider it. You can come in for a job interview. There's only one team, if I was the head coach of, that I would not even think about it. I would not even consider it. And that team is the New York Jets, because I just don't think it's the right fit. I don't think you can bring Rex Ryan back to this team. I think, you know, the issues are he's got the existing relationship with members of the media. You know, there's a portion of the fan base that will always love him. The second your team goes on a losing streak, the fans will be calling crazy, we need to promote Rex. So I just think it's a bad situation. You know, he wants that head coaching job, and I would worry that he'd go in and undermine me, because again, he's got the relationship with the media, he's got the relationship with the fan base. I think it's very difficult when you've been the head guy to go back somewhere and be an assistant. And, you know, sometimes it does happen. Wade Phillips went back to Denver, but that was, you know, 20 years after he was fired as head coach. You know, Dave Campo came back to Dallas. Gunther Cunningham came back to Kansas City a few years after they were fired as head coach. But they just were not the same type of personality. Rex is just such a dominant personality. I almost feel like he'd be a distraction. And I know he's a good defensive coach, but it's not like he's the only quality defensive coordinator out there who you could hire. So if I were, you know, in another city where I knew that the media would not play a big, you know, he would not have a big relationship with the media, where there was no, you know, where he was less likely to undermine me, I probably would consider it. I'm not saying he'd be my first hire, but he'd be a guy who would definitely be worth interviewing, a guy worth speaking to. But I just could not see him returning to the Jets in anything less than a head coaching role. I could not imagine him being happy in that scenario. So I would be a no for Rex Ryan coming back to this football team. I think that would just not be the right fit for anybody involved. I think that I see a lot of issues potentially coming up from such a situation. Next question. Having watched Sam Darnold for the last season, is there any offensive system that would put him in the best position to succeed given his skill set and weaknesses? I think that you probably want a scheme where, well, I mean, first of all, you want a system where you're utilizing a lot of the best modern practices, you know, stacking receivers, you know, putting in stacking receivers to give guys free releases, give Darnold easy throws, creating artificial separation that way, using motions to, again, create busts, using complex motions to create busts, and also, you know, forcing the defense to tip his hand pre-snap. I mean, I'd like to spread the field a lot, allow Sam to make some pretty simple pre-snap reads. I think generally speaking, you're going to want your offense to get the ball out quickly. You're going to want to get the, you know, you're going to want make plays where Sam can make quick pre-snap reads and distribute the ball quickly, because I think that's where his strength is. I think he processes the game so quickly that's what you can take advantage of. So, you know, a quick passing, quick hitting offense. And but part of the aspect of this is that the system doesn't really matter for Sam, because a lot of his game is based on making off schedule plays, you know, evading pressure, playing some schoolyard football. You know, he's going to be a guy like Aaron Rodgers or Ben Roethlisberger or Tony Romo in that sense. So, you know, part of it is the system's not going to matter, because he's just going to make plays on his own. You've seen some of the plays he can make outside the pocket. So as much as the system matters, I think what also matters is making sure you have the right personnel around him. And that means, you know, smart receivers who understand how to play schoolyard football, you know, who when a quarterback points, you're going to know to look back and break the routes, or know to look back and come back to the to Darnold if he's scrambling, if he's in trouble. I think those are important things to have as well. Our next question. Whoever the new coach is, what defensive scheme would you like the new defensive coordinator to run? I'd personally be intrigued to see a 4-3. I think Darren Lee as an outside linebacker in a 4-3 would be a much better fit. Probably could say the same about Leonard Williams. So I think what I'd say is the difference between 4-3 and 3-4, I think that that's a kind of a thing of the past. I think most teams are running multiple fronts where they're playing 3-4 sometimes, they're playing 4-3 sometimes. Or at least, you know, those types of fronts, because most of the league's in nickel right now. So I think the whole delineation between 3-4 and 4-3 is kind of out the window. It doesn't really matter anymore, because most teams are using multiple fronts. The days of teams using exclusively 4-man fronts or exclusively 3-man fronts are mostly a thing of the past. And so I think, you know, the things you're looking at are, you know, do you blitz frequently? Do your linemen play one gap or two gaps? And you know, do you play man or zone coverage? I think those are the things you look at more in defensive scheme now than 4-3 or 3-4, because I think most teams are incorporating aspects of both systems, and they've needed to be adjusted because you're in nickel so much, because the NFL is now a league where you have more than two receivers on the field at a time. You know, when we talk about Lee, I think one of the things the Jets might look at is making sure he doesn't have to take on blocks, because I think one thing that's clear is that he cannot shed blocks. So if he's not strong enough at the point of attack. So that means, you know, sticking him outside more, or it means doing more two gapping. And what two gapping is it means that somebody's responsible for the gap on both sides of an offensive lineman. So their job is essentially to just eat up that off, make sure that offensive lineman does not get any push. Their job is pretty much not. Their job is not to make a tackle. Their job is not to penetrate. Their job is to just tie up that offensive lineman. And in the guy like Lee's case, that's the reason you two gap. So that way Lee does not have to engage with blockers. That way you just have a guy who's essentially a defensive blocker. He's essentially blocking an offensive lineman for Lee, so that Lee does not have to get off that block. I think that's where Lee would improve. So yeah, I think, you know, you hear this a lot. I think the league has kind of moved away from the point where there's a clear delineation between teams that are quote-unquote 4-3 versus quote-unquote 3-4. I think there are other aspects of defensive systems that are more important now. So I think that's one thing I would do, is I would make sure I'd have a nose tackle who two gaps. And if I kept Lee at an inside linebacker spot, a similar spot to that he plays now, I would want to make sure that he's not constantly engaging with blockers. That's the thing I do with Lee. Next question, Antonio Brown to the Jets. So the Jets are favorites to land AB with 3-1 odds. We've recently seen quarterbacks produce much more in their second year, not only because they got a young, innovative offensive head coach, along with having a year under their belt, but because the front office got them a legitimate number one receiver, like Carson Wentz with Alshon Jeffrey, Mitch Trubisky with Allen Robinson. This team needs to find a real number one receiver for Darnold's development and might have a chance at arguably the best receiver in the league. Shouldn't have to rely on number twos like Inunua and Anderson. However, there's also the off-field drama to deal with, along with him getting up there in age. I don't want to see him lash out at Sam on the sideline when he's not getting targeted enough, or if Sam throws a bad pass in his direction. We see how the New York media treats Beckham with a small fraction of the things AB's done. So would you try and trade for Brown? Why or why not? If you could, how much would you give to get Antonio Brown? Well, I think the problem here is the Jets can't trade for Antonio Brown. I don't think the Jets have the resources to trade for Antonio Brown without. And this is, you know, when I complain about the job Mike Maccagnan's doing, you know, it reminds me of my mom's comment, I'm not doing it for my health. I mean, nobody would watch the Jets for their health, but the Jets don't have the resources. The Jets have not planned ahead well enough, and it's a consistent thing. They don't have the draft picks. I don't think they have the draft, unless you want to give up the number 3 overall pick for Brown, which I think would be a big mistake because of his age and his contract and what you can get at number 3 overall. I don't think they have the pieces, because they don't have a second-round pick. So most of the teams in the league that the Jets would compete with have the ability to top their offer. And for whatever reason, I'm not saying it's right or wrong, picks this, you know, you could trade next year second, but picks this year are more, in the NFL, are viewed as more attractive than picks next year. So Jets are at an inherent disadvantage. They just have not planned well enough. They have not stockpiled picks the way they should have. And I know they don't have their second this year because of the Darnold trade last year, but it's a consistent thing. They find themselves short on draft picks. And it hurts them in a number of ways, but one of the ways it hurts them is that when an opportunity like this presents itself, they're not in a position to pounce. So, I mean, I don't think that, I think what I think is that, you know, what we can argue Brown either way. I think that there is a case to be made that, you know, maybe you don't want a guy who's going to be a distraction around Darnold. You think back to early in Eli Manning's career. He did not really take off till Jeremy Shockey was removed from the team. Now, the case for Brown's obvious. Again, you know, he's the best receiver in football. You know, the thing is, think about, you know, the funny thing about problem players is you're willing to put up with a lot more problems when a guy produces. It's proportional to the way the guy produces. A guy who produces like Brown, you're willing to deal with a lot more. But, you know, you could argue with, I think you could make an argument either way, but I don't think it matters, because I just don't think the Jets have the pieces, because they've once again prepared themselves so poorly. They have not put themselves in a position to strike when the iron's hot. So, you know, you'll hear some buzz in the media about how, oh, they're going, they'll probably call the Steelers, you know, at least gauge what the Steelers want. But it's tough for me to see how the Jets end up being the top bidder here, because they don't have the draft capital. What the Jets have in resources is cap space, and you can't trade cap space. You know, you can't trade cap space to the Steelers. So what else do the Jets have? I don't think the Jets have the assets. And you talk about players, outside of Jamal Adams, I don't think the Jets really have and Darnold, outside of Jamal Adams, who you're not going to trade, but outside of Jamal Adams, I don't think the Jets really have many tangible assets in terms of players, and I don't have the draft pick. So I don't see it happening. Our last question, why is it so difficult to build a quality staff in the NFL? Why have our last head coaches struggled so much to build a complete staff? You know, I don't think there's an easy answer to that, but I do think that the NFL is a very nepotistic league where people hire their friends, they hire people that they know. And I think that that's actually true throughout football. And, you know, the example, you want to know a great example of nepotism in football, and this is the college level, but if you watch the college football playoff final on Monday night, you saw a dominant performance by Clemson, just an incredible defensive scheme that was just brilliant. Their defensive coordinator, Brett Venables, I think is one of the finest defensive coaches in football. I think he's one of the best coaches on any level of football. He is so good. Brett Venables is such a good coach that if I found out the Jets were interviewing him, even though he's a college coordinator, I would not be upset, because I think he's an excellent coach. And if I was hired as head coach of the Jets, and I don't think Venables would leave Clemson because his kids are around there, and I think he's a family guy, and he easily could have been a college head coach a long time ago if he wanted to. But if there was a chance he'd leave Clemson and come to the NFL, I'd run him a blank check to be a defensive coordinator here. Brent Venables was essentially pushed out at Oklahoma because Bob Stoops brought his brother back. And Bob Stoops, who was the then head coach, decided to hire his brother. Venables was defensive coordinator at Oklahoma. Stoops' brother needed a job, so Stoops hires his brother and essentially pushes Venables out. And if you followed Oklahoma, Oklahoma's defense was a laughing stock under Stoops' brother. And Stoops' brother stayed when the transition was made to Lincoln Riley, and then was finally fired this year. So, you know, there's just a lot of nepotism. People hire their friends. People hire people they know. I think that has a lot to do with it. I think the other issue is just coaches. You know, when you're a head coach, being a head coach is different from being an assistant. There are just certain aspects of the job that change. And one of them is you typically don't have to hire people as an assistant. You never have had to hire people in your career before, so it's just a new skill. So a lot of the guys aren't good at it. And I think there's a little element of, you know, some guys don't care about what happens on their side of the ball. I think some guys don't care about what happens on the other side of the ball. They just view it as, you know, a defensive coach may view hiring an offensive coordinator as just something they have to do, and then they can worry about the other side of the ball. Part of it's just they don't supervise the other guy well enough. You know, an offensive coach may not care enough about the defense to, you know, really scrutinize the defensive game plan. I think that's an aspect of it. I mean, you just don't have the interest in the other side of the ball. So I think that there's a lot that plays into it. And, you know, a lot of coaches just aren't that good. A lot of guys just are not ready to handle the responsibilities of being the head coach. So, you know, lots of reasons. Being a head coach in the NFL is not easy. That's why a lot of guys aren't that good at it. So, you know, I don't think there's a simple answer. I think there are a lot of different factors that come into it. That's our show for today. Thank you for listening. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, if you like the show, subscribe to iTunes or Spotify, and leave the show a good review in iTunes if you do enjoy it. Hope you have a great Wednesday. We'll be back again tomorrow.